I invite you to pray with me. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God. In this last message in our series that I've entitled Moments with Jesus, we experience a trusting moment between Jesus and a Samaritan woman at a well. One of the key verses in this text is John chapter 4, verse 4. The basic English Bible translation said, it was necessary for Jesus to go to Samaria. In the American Standard Bible, it said he must pass through Samaria. The complete English Jewish Bible says this meant he had to go to Samaria. In these three translations and many other translations, there seemed to be a compelling reason for Jesus to travel through Samaria. While the route through Samaria is the shortest path to Jerusalem, to Galilee, many devout Jews typically chose to avoid this route. This avoidance really stems from a long-standing distrust and animosity between many Jewish people at the time of Jesus and many of the Samaritans. Historically, you're going to get a little history lesson. Is that okay? A little history. Historically, in 722 BC, the Assyrians conquered the northern kingdom of Israel. And they exiled nearly all of the Jewish population from the land. They only left in the land behind the lowest classes of society. Then 136 years later, the Babylonians conquered the southern kingdom of Judah and implemented a similar strategy or similar policy. And those who they left behind, they intermarried and gradually settled in the region, leading to the emergence of what is known in the Bible time as Samaritans, as an ethnic and a religious group. The Samaritans had a historical connection to the people of Israel, and their faith was really a combination of commands and rituals from the laws of Moses and many of their traditions. During Jesus' time, most Jews despised Samaritans, viewing them as even less favorable as even Gentiles. And they considered Samaritans to be half-breeds with a mixed, kind of eclectic kind of faith. And this deep-seated animosity turned strained their relationships between Jews and Samaritans, and there was significant tension and hostility between Jews and Samaritans during the time of Jesus, arising both from religious and ethnic differences. Samaritans were often regarded as heretics. They were viewed as apostates and deviants from what was considered the true faith. The true Jewish faith. Their beliefs were seen as a corrupted version of Judaism. Samaritans rejected many traditions and focused solely on the Pentateuch, disregarding the prophetic writings as many Jewish communities did. And a significant point of contention was their practice of where they worshiped, not in the temple in Jerusalem, which was viewed by many Jews as blasphemous. This was just a heretical act on the part of Samaritans. Additionally, Jews often perceived Samaritans as not originating from the 12 tribes of Israel, or at best, a result of intermarriage with foreign people. And this perception contributed to the belief in the population of their pollution, of their bloodline from the Jewish standpoint. I told you you're going to get a little history lesson. But it's important to set the backdrop of this relationship between Jesus and this Samaritan woman. Interactions were often really tense due to the religious and the ethnic differences, which led really to what? Mutual hostility. It led to prejudice. The result is indifference and strained interaction between these two groups, the Jews and the Samaritans during the time of Jesus. Now, we have many historical parallels of this tense relationship. And one that came to mind to me was the white Christian missionaries who went to Africa trying to convert traditional Africans into Western Christianity during the time of the colonial era. Many missionaries viewed African cultures and African religions with disdain, perceiving them as inferior, primitive, and even as demonic. These white Christian missionaries regarded African religious customs and practices as evil, evils to be eradicated. They took extreme measures to really ensure that these traditions were abolished in favor of Western Christianity. And Christian missionaries from America often describe African beliefs as devilish, as satanic, as demonic. They promoted Western culture, they promoted Western practices, and viewed African customs as pagan and as evil. And I say this, rest his soul, there was a dear friend of my family that attended the church that I grew up. I'm not going to call his name or the church that I attended, but he attended the church that I grew up in Los Angeles. It was a white congregation. And I remember having a conversation with him because he was a missionary to West Africa. I was about 12 years old. And he said something to me that 50 years later, I still remember. He said, "These savages in Africa." And I thought to myself, why would you call human beings savages? Many missionaries practiced and participated in the destruction of houses of worship and sacred objects, believing these African traditions and these African practices represented the devil and they represented idolatry. And some even taught that salvation and even full humanity could only be attained through conversion to European Christianity. I said that to say that in summary, the interaction between the Jews and the Samaritans during the time of Jesus, as well as the interaction between the American white Christian missionaries and the African, illustrate how one group's view of itself as dominant often views the belief and the race and the culture of others as suspicious, as disdain and a sense of superiority. And needless to say, this perspective always results in hostility. It always results in prejudice. It always results in an attempt to suppress or eliminate the belief of that culture, of that race, of that practice, or even of that other group. So back to the text. The indirect route from Jerusalem to Galilee passed through an area beyond the Jordan River. This journey took significantly longer. So, if I was trying to give you directions to my house, and I told you, take Ventura all the way to Laurel Canyon, take Laurel Canyon down all the way to where it turns into Crescent Height. Then take Crescent Height all the way to Pico. Make a left on Pico. Take Pico all the way to La Brea, and then take La Brea all the way to Baldwin Hills. You would say, what the heck? Because you can take the 405. And connect on the 90 West and get there in half the time. And so the route to Jerusalem, the more direct route, was through Samaria. The indirect route is the route that some That's the indirect route, through Samaria. Direct route through Samaria. You go through Samaria, you get there in a shorter time. Samaria is the 405. The other route, the roundabout route, is the way you take when you want to avoid being in contact with the Samaritans. The text says that Jesus had to travel through Samaria. Jesus didn't. Jesus intentionally took that route through Samaria. It does not appear that this need, as it is described in the text, was based on any travel logistics or practical reason. So maybe Jesus was compelled to go through the hood, through the inner city, through the minority, through the ghetto, through the BIPOC, not to be confused with Tupac community, because Jesus had an appointment with a woman at a well. And today's passage introduces this woman at this well. Based on her brief description, she seems jaded and worn out from the relentless cycle of life. Do you know anybody like that? Have you experienced anyone like that in 2025? Worn out and jaded by the cycles of life. It appears that she has experienced her ups and downs of life and has grown tired of it all. And one day she arrives in this small town called Sychar. And she went to a well located near a plot of land that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. And tired from his journey, Jesus sat by the well. It was around the sixth hour. The city of Sychar was ancient. Shechem served the city of Sychar. This was where Abraham arrived in Canaan. This was where God spoke to Abraham. Sychar was where Abraham built an altar to God. Sychar was where Jacob built an altar to God. Sychar was where Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, was violated and raped, and her brothers then wreaked havoc on the city and killed all of the men in the city. Sychar, this plot of land, the one that Jacob gave to his son, it was the land that Jacob had conquered from the Amorites. Sychar, this is where this, eventually the bones of Jacob was buried in Sychar. And after a long day of walking, Jesus was exhausted. And the Gospel of John emphasized that Jesus is God. One of the things that you will find as you read through the Gospel of God, John, is that he wants to say that Jesus is God. But it also wants the reader to understand that Jesus is not above human limitations. So he shows the divine side of God, and then he shows the human side of God. And the text reads, "Thus Jesus sat by the well." That's in the King James Version. You know, "Thus saith the Lord." That word "thus" adds some nuances that is difficult really to convey in the English language. It's really meant to emphasize the idea of his utter weariness. The other day I was playing pickleball and it was hot and my whole body ached. I played 4 hours consecutively. Can you imagine the weariness that Jesus must have experienced walking all that way from one location to another? It's the equivalent of me walking from here to North Hollywood. And it's utter weariness. It was around noon. And you know what happens at noon? Noon is when the sun is at its highest point. Noon is when you're feeling all of the direct heat from the sunshine, all of the energy, which brings the most direct sunlight and the highest energy level. And so Jesus would likely have wanted some refreshment after walking all that way. And he comes to this well, and a woman came to that well at the same time to draw water, but she arrives at a different time from the other women, because drawing water was a woman's job. As laborious as it was, drawing water was a woman's job. Usually, the other women came early in the morning when it was cool. The well was located about a mile out of town, and so making the task of drawing water and then carrying that water back, it was physically demanding. It was difficult. But this woman in our text came to the well at an unusual hour, all alone. And typically, women gathered in the well in groups. Perhaps they were there, she was there at an unexpected time because she had an unexpected need. Or maybe she was a social outcast, a woman of questionable reputation, shunned by others in the community. Yet she seemed to carry this consciousness, this awareness of, I want something better. I want something more. Her life at this point reads like the lyrics of that wonderful Tracy Chapman song, At This Point in My Life. Have you ever heard that song? Hear the words. Done so many things wrong. I don't know if I can do right. Oh, I've done so many things wrong, I don't know if I can do right. At this point in my life, I've done so many things wrong, I don't know if I can do right. If you put your trust in me, hope I won't let you down. If you give me a chance, I'll try. You see, it's been a hard road, the road I'm traveling on. And if I take your hand, I might lead you down a path of ruin. I've had a hard life. Just saying it so you'll understand. Oh, it's right now. I've done so many things wrong. I don't know if I could do right at this point in my life. That's what the life of this woman seemed like in our text. And so she meets Jesus at this well. And Jesus, a Jew, said to her, give me something to drink. By tradition, rabbis would not speak to women in public, not even their wife or their sister or their daughter. It was also very unusual for a Jewish person at this time to ask a favor of a Samaritan or even drink from the same cup that a Samaritan would drink. But Jesus was thirsty. And this wouldn't be the first time that Jesus would be described as being parched. In the New Testament, later on the cross, Jesus would say, I thirst. I wonder, when I read texts like this, my mind just races, and I wonder how Jesus really phrased his request to that Samaritan woman. Did he say, oh, I'm so thirsty, will you give me a drink? Or perhaps Jesus may have said, may I have a drink, please? Or could it be that Jesus delivered his request in a condescending tone by a privileged person who feels entitled, give me something to drink now? Additionally, where were the disciples? Were they sent away by Jesus in order to allow this sacred trusting moment between Jesus and this woman? And what if the tone and the response of the woman had been different? You ever read the Bible and think about things like this? I do. What if she had challenged Jesus by saying something similar to that scene in Taxi Driver? Are you talking to me? I know you're not talking to me. Or what if she expressed her anger and strong emotions because she felt unseen or offended and said, like a sister would have said, who do you think you're talking to? I ain't your slave. Those are some interesting thoughts to consider, not just for this text, But the interesting thoughts to consider when we think about and reflect on how you and I feel when we are offended, how you and I respond to other people and their request. Jesus' request genuinely surprised this woman, and immediately she was impressed by his friendliness. Jesus engage in a religious discussion with this woman. Then in verses 11 and 12 and verse 15, she employs sarcasm and ridicule in an attempt to steer the conversation in a different direction. When Jesus offers insightful commentary in verses 16 to 18 in his attempt to initiate a religious debate in verses 19 and 20, she tries to evade the conversation. When Jesus raises this penetrating question, where's your husband? I have no husband. You're right. You've had five. And the one you're with right now is not yours. According to the text, the woman says, how is it that you, being a Jew, ask me for a drink, a Samaritan woman? This is significant because Jews typically had no interactions with Samaritans. But in this tender moment and this meeting with the Samaritan woman, John showed us that Jesus has something to say about those despised. Jesus had something to say about the least of these. Jesus has something to say about the people we want to kick to the curb. Jesus has something to say to the people that we would look down upon. Jesus has something to say to the least of those. And Jesus drew the woman into conversation, inviting her to think about things of God. Jesus invited her to think about who Jesus is. Jesus invited her to think about what Jesus could do for her. And in this extended public conversation with this woman, Jesus was straining the boundaries of cultural norms. Jesus, interacting with a woman, a Jew interacting with a Samaritan. He gently guides her to a deeper understanding, not only of who Jesus was, but Jesus guides her to a deeper understanding of who she is. Jesus displays so much love and such a sense of security that this woman felt safe. She let her guards down. And when her wrongdoings were exposed, she didn't become defensive. And is that not what you and I, as followers of Jesus, have been called to do? What Jesus did is Jesus provided a place where this woman's dirty laundry could be hung, and she didn't feel shame. Jesus provided a place where she could pull off all her masks and show us just who she was without feeling condemnation. Have you ever experienced a safe place like that? My dad would tell me he experienced that kind of place in Alcoholics Anonymous, where he could be himself. Because in the church, we have mastered the art of being fake. How are you doing? Oh, I'm blessed and highly favored of the Lord. My marriage is falling apart. My kids are on drugs. I lost my job. I'm blessed and highly favored of the Lord. When can we be real? Life is falling apart. The country is falling apart. My family is falling apart. This woman was in a place with Jesus where she could be real. There are not too many places like that. And let me warn you, there are not too many people like that. Because there are a lot of people in the world, when you air your dirty laundry, just know that it's going to be on the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 o'clock news. I think that's part of our calling. People will come to me, and it doesn't happen that much now, but they'll say, in the past, they'll say, don't judge me. And I'm like, when did I become God? When do I have a right to stand in a place of condemnation of anyone? You know, it's like, you without sin cast the first stone. I think that's what we've been called to do, to create a safe place here at Bethel Encino Lutheran Church, a safe place where people can come and confess and come and repent and come and change. The interaction between Jesus leaves this woman feeling genuine affection. It left her feeling like she was cared for, a sense of being cherished. It gave her validation and support. The interaction between Jesus made her feel noticed and acknowledged and valued in her presence. It made her feel included and accepted. How do people feel after they interact with you and me? How do people feel? Do they feel rejected? Do they feel isolation? Do they feel that, oh Lord, everybody's going to know about my business now? How do people feel when they sit down and confide in you? I really messed up and I want to change. I really want to break this addiction. I really want to do right. When they leave your presence, how do they feel? When they leave my presence, how do they feel? I wonder what our interactions with people leave them feeling. What does our interactions with people leave them thinking? Jesus leads her to a point where she is ready to listen. And after experiencing this trusting moment of grace-filled moment with Jesus, if you notice the text, the woman forgets what she went to the well for. She runs away from the well without the water that she went there for because Jesus had filled her, with something else. When people leave your presence and my presence, I forgot the problem I had. I forgot the situation I was in. I forgot my depression. I forgot my defeated attitude. And now I want to run and tell somebody else. After experiencing this trusting moment with Jesus, she seemed to forget her original mission of fetching water from the well. And her focus shifts. The woman left her water pot, went into the city. And I love that the text says, she tells the men. Now, that's interesting because does the men refer to the other disciples? Or does the men refer to all those men in those other relationships that she had? I'm going to leave that for you to ponder. Because she runs and tells the men, come and see. The woman's invitation was so compelling that those men that she told, possibly the ones who shunned her, possibly the ones who shamed her, possibly the ones who had affair with her, her invitation was so compelling that they left where they were and went to Jesus. Jesus stretched the limits of cultural propriety. with this extending conversation with the Samaritan woman. The Samaritan woman was so impressed by Jesus' love that she sought out her fellow villagers, who probably treated her as an outcast, and told them, let me tell you something. Let me tell you about someone who told me about myself. Jesus had so impacted her life with this brief conversation that she was transformed. Man, oh man. Have you ever thought about the impact that you and I have on the people that we come in contact with? Do you know the power that we have to begin transformation in someone's life? Try it this week. Plant some love in someone's life, and you don't know where that seed is going to grow. This woman was transformed because of one experience with this Jesus. The Jesus that we say live inside of us. One experience, one encounter. She is not mentioned anywhere else in the Bible. This one encounter with Jesus, one encounter with you can transform someone's life. One encounter with you can cause someone thinking about death by suicide to say, maybe I have some other option. One encounter with you could give someone the hope that they need. So she runs to the very people that have probably shamed her, to tell him, I met somebody. But this time she isn't discussing a rendezvous. She's talking about redemption. This time she hasn't come to arrange an affair. She has come to proclaim amazing grace. This time she's not seeking a date, but she wants to introduce someone to a deliverer. She's changed. And those who knew her best are the ones that she goes and tells. It's an amazing, trusting moment. Let's pray. God, we thank you for the opportunities that you give us to be Christ-like in this world. Amen.